what do y'all want with me, right? Because I have to be a black man first. And they wasn't going to allow me to do that. They was going to allow that I have to be a cop first to them, or I have to be a decoy first to them, or I have to be this. Nah, bro, I'm a black man first.
This is Jen Slumack. You're listening to Just Say It, a show that aims to highlight the commonplaces among us, as each is an other by definition. To collapse these constructs is to move toward Dr. King's beloved community. Today's conversation is with a man named Leo, who is the founder of the Mercer Brotherhood. Mercer works to leverage hip-hop as a platform for social change. They've mobilized a network of cultural media experts and consultants, including photographers, video, graphic design, event production, sound engineering, etc., all of which work with up-and-coming conscious artists to ensure success. Now, when I met Leo in 2010, we were both involved in some restorative justice work that was happening in Alameda County. He was one of the facilitators of a group that was helping young people deal with the racism and the repeat incarceration and the trauma that lives in communities of color. Over the years, his work has continued, and he's grown as a man, as a father, as an artist, and he's got an organization called Mercer Brotherhood, which their mission is to provide artistic and educational services to underserved youth through hip-hop music and culture. And they envision a generation of youth who are strong-willed, socially aware, and committed to having a positive impact on their communities. Now, in his own words, he says, "We are close to the problems, therefore we can be close to the solutions." Now, as I said, this conversation happened in 2018, and I wasn't going to publish it because, frankly, the sound quality is kind of crappy. He was in a Starbucks. You know, I had shoddy connection with the internet, and so it just kind of has been sitting in a folder. And with all that's happening today, I thought, boy, what a great conversation we had. I should publish that. So I called him up, and I asked him about it. And not only did we have a second interview, which I will also share with you, we agreed that after listening to this, that we should publish this just for the invitation for people to get into conversation about the difficult things. Okay, so this is Leo and I going over some of the difficult things, and we don't do it perfectly, and you won't either. Now, full transparency, there are some explicit words in here. We both cuss a little bit in this conversation. But there's so much good stuff in here that we wanted to share with you. So Leo and I give you a talk we shared in 2018.
My goal is to create some informative, emotionally engaging, intellectually stimulating, inspiring media. And any way that we can collaborate and doing that kind of work together, bro, I am so with it because it's so overdue. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. I was just looking at the photo of me, you, and Cap, the one that you posted on Facebook the other day.
Yeah.
Oh, man, the EMT days is a long time ago.
Yeah. Right? You didn't have any hair back then, man.
Man, I was in the Matrix.
I would love to have you talk about that because there's no blame on folks who are in the Matrix because we are a product of our environment, right, in general. Mm-hmm. We're a product of the ignorance that our media and our public discourse promotes. But boy, breaking out of that is a whole new game. It's a whole new gig.
Unlearn.
Right? Yeah.
Lifetime unlearn.
I guess we'll start with two things that I want to ask you. Number one is, I'm calling you Leo, correct?
Yes, Leo Mercer.
Leo Mercer. And are you still a youth mentor at Determination?
My role has shifted. So yes, I'm a youth mentor, but I'm also more as a leadership person at Determination now. I do a lot of facilitation. I host a lot. I do a lot at Determination. It's just fun being around the brothers. But for the most part, I started off as a participant. And very quickly, they seen that I had leadership qualities. So they giving me the torch. Yeah.
In the course of our conversation and talking about how you got involved with Determination, I'd really like to also just honor and uplift the late Dr. White.
Yeah.
And his investment not only in Oakland, but in these kinds of organizations and in you as an individual. Moving away from the Matrix.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? Like this brother's role, like I really want to make sure that we celebrate and honor and lift him up.
Absolutely. He's had many, many conversations with me that I know now that he's passed, I'm obligated to this work, right? And I don't think I would have had that push if I didn't meet that guy. You know what I mean? And I've only known him for a year and a half. So that just shows the impact that he's made on somebody like me. So yeah. Just think about the impact that he's made on a lot of people who go through struggles a lot worse than mine. You know?
That's right. That's right. I'm trying to do a series on the impact of incarceration. So that's sort of how we decided that we were going to talk today. And the impact of incarceration, I don't even know how to do it in one show, but I figure we can touch on it. I know that you've had some experience with being a consumer of the criminal justice system, but also being an advocate and, what do you call yourself, a raptivist in the community and building brothers up. And I've known you for a little while, but I don't know who you are today as much as I knew who you were then when we were starting. So I'd love to talk to you about how you got involved in some of the community organizations like DSAL and REACH, and then what you've done since then. You know, in 2012, California sort of got forced to begin to deal with itself. Around the criminal justice system, around the overpopulation of prisons, over the insanity of the sentencing structure. California didn't get pushed into a corner to deal with itself because it was concerned about the harm caused in the communities. It got pushed into the corner to deal with itself because it was costing too much to house people.
Man.
And they were going to get sued, and this is what we're talking about, all right? So we didn't have a moment of clarity as a state or as a political organization or anything like that. There was no moment of clarity that said, oh my God, this is devastating. Mm-hmm. Generations of communities, right? That's not what happened. However, what took place following that in order to avoid lawsuit was the beginning of some system change with Assembly Bill 109 and then to Prop 47 and Prop 57 and all of these different things. Okay. So in my opinion, Leo, we're a long, long way from having this thing fixed. And I don't want people along the way and along the journey of this process, which will take time. I don't want them to miss men like you.
Absolutely.
And so tell us who you are and how you got to where you're at.
For me, it's kind of a simple timeline, right? 2009, graduated from high school. And that's kind of where I've tried to ascend myself to be a positive person. You know, Leo Mercer or Roy Terry per se, right? Before I figured out that, you know, it's not about what name you're given, it's about what name you choose to be called. I came out of school, high school, 2009, feeling like I don't know shit. They didn't teach me nothing. So with that, right, looking at all of my experiences and struggles, I tried to, you know, and moving around and stuff like that, I was just looking for an alleyway of positivity. Found that through DSAL. Well, not through DSAL, right? But ended up working with DSAL through Lamont Cap. DSAL is the Deputy Sheriff's Activities League. It's like a civilian staff portion of the Alameda County Sheriff's Office. Their goal was to prevent crime by providing people like me to help mentor young men. So what I would do while I was working with DSAL is take youth on outdoor trips, teach them how to utilize first aid techniques, all the stuff that I was learning at the time. So I learned it 2 days later. I'm teaching it to a group of youth that I got organized at Reach Ashland Youth Center to learn these things, right? So I'm learning as well as being a peer to a lot of the youth, which I thought in my mind was a key, right? Because as a youngster myself, I'm not trying to listen to nobody who don't look like me, you know? And that's just the black and white of it. And it seems that my whole high school career, that's what's been happening. And not only that that's what's been happening, they've been lying to us. So now I have to start as a zero-year-old and learn all of these things by myself, right, or within my own means. So I kind of gave a lot of the youth that same avenue. Don't necessarily look just to your teacher to learn about some things. Look to yourself, trust your instinct, trust your gut, trust that you know what you're talking about. I worked with DSAL all the way up until 2013, and actually that's a funny story. I got fired because I went to an Oscar Grant rally. My boy Oscar was murdered in 2009. And I went to an Oscar Grant rally, and you know, they, of course, they like, fuck the police, fuck the police. I get right up there, where the fuck the police? So I talked to my supervisor the other day, and I didn't tell her I went, right? You know, it ain't her business. But she pulled me to the side and asked me, and then when I told her that I was there, she kind of just laid the law on me. Like, you can't be doing shit like that representing DSAL. That made me think, what do y'all want with me, right? Because I have to be a black man first. And they wasn't going to allow me to do that. They was going to allow that I have to be a cop first to them, or I have to be a decoy first, or I have to be this. Nah, bro, I'm a black man first. So if I go to an Oscar Grant rally, I don't give a damn if I'm working with the cops. I'm talking about fuck the police. because at the end of the day, Oscar Grant's death is not justified. But not a lot of people's death that look like me is justified. And that hurts, right? As a black person, knowing that you have an organization that's telling you, chill, chill.
Yeah.
You know, like, fuck all that. You know, that's just how I feel about it. So that kind of abruptly ended. It's very important that I have to be who I am first. That's a young black man, you know? Even with them working with D-Cell, I've been arrested by a lot of their staff. They don't know who I am today. I've made connections with a couple of officers in there that I see as some good, but for the most part, they're in a system that I know that they can't control either. They're getting flipped by the system because they're trying to go into the system and change it, knowing that that's just a big system and ain't no one person or one group going to change it. They're going to be this way. And sooner or later, I know that being in D-Cell taught me that. So I wouldn't have been able to know that if I didn't jump into D-Cell, right? Which was my thing, right? Because I already knew that any type of correlation to police is going to make it to where my community doesn't want to deal with me anymore. And that's happened time and time again to me and Lamont, where they're like, oh, that's dope. But, oh, you work with D-Cell? Ain't they the police? And we like, yeah, but it's not like that. You know, and they like, I don't give a fuck what it's like.
Right.
I'm not dealing with you.
And Leo, you said something really important, and I just want to make sure that we touch on it again. You said two things really important. Number one, you said, I have to be who I am first. I have to be a young black man first, right? Mm-hmm. And the reason that that's critical is because that's how the world sees you first. You need to be able to be who that is and understand how that is seen and engaged with in the world. Otherwise, we can't move if we don't know who we are. I don't remember who said it, but somebody said, you'd be amazed how the world treats you when you know who you are. When we stop behaving in response to the world's idea of us and we dig deep inside of ourselves, you said that you like to teach the young men to trust themselves, to trust their gut, to believe that they know what they're talking about. Especially so long as it's righteous. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
And I just wanted to bring that. I wanted to highlight that you said that because I don't think that gets said enough. I think we don't spend enough time, whoever we are, figuring out who we are. So knowing who you are and being able to come at the world that way and being able to engage with your community in a way that they trust you. But also having had the experience inside of D-Cell that even the folks inside of D-Cell can't change the system because the system is bigger than those folks. So this is the complexity of the issue.
For as much as it's worth, personal relationships very, very much matter to me, right? And loyalty very much matters to me. So a lot of times in my work with D-Cell, right, I had a lot of love for the staff up there. Hillary, Marty, all them. I got mad love for them. It's just my love was contingent on how I feel they thought about me. After a while, it just seems like I was a decoy. I was energy to be used. Oh, we got to stop these little black kids from killing each other. So let's throw Roy out there to say stop. And I was like, I can't just be that. You feel what I'm saying? I have to be more than that. I have to know, in my opinion, you know, just as me looking like these kids, I have to have internal conversations that a lot of times Hillary and Marty can't hear for my liberation with these young men, right? Because I know that these young men don't trust people like, they don't trust them. I trust them. But at the same time, it's only contingent on what I, at that time, what I knew that they could provide to me in helping the young men out, right?
And if you're behaving.
Yeah, and I'm a nonviolent dude that's trying to do it, right? Now, if I was fucking shit up at the time, they would have been like, yeah, we don't need that type of stuff. It's a little violent. But it came to that point, too, because a lot of things that my life kept happening, right? And I kept getting in trouble. And the trouble was contingent on whatever was going on, what like things that young black men go through that Marty and Hillary did not understand. And I'm sitting there having talks with Hillary and Marty talking about, you know, this is what happened. This is why I had to do this, being so 100 with them. I'm not lying. I'm not trying to deceive them. And they really hit me with some oppressive shit. It's probably not their fault, but that's the case. So I have to respond to that. There's been this thing since I left D-Cell where they was trying to get the sheriff to take over Reach. Like, that was something that the YLC talked about. I was a part of the YLC. They ain't said nothing about that. The YLC is the Youth Leadership Council of the Reach Ashton Youth Center. I was a part of that committee when Reach Ashton Youth Center was first being built in 2012. I was a part of that whole process. We was the young men that said D-Cell could be a part of Reach. Because usually we understand that the community don't want to deal with no cops, period. For nothing, for no reason. Like, the only way we deal with cops is if we have to, in a forced setting. But usually, We was trying to raise community resistance by restorative justice. Back before I even knew what restorative justice was, I did that through DCEL, but there was no talk saying we wanted DCEL to operate or take over or do. Nah, bro. Like, come on. Not if this thing is going to work. Hillary rode the ride until she couldn't ride the ride no more, and she ended up trying to fire me, and I quit. I end up working for a couple other core organizations in Reach after that, but I end up stopped working at Reach because a lot of people were scared of the presence of DCEL to the point to where they allowed them to do what they want. That's why I had to go. Because after I was done with Reach, I seen Society going to DCEL. I seen Arts and Culture going, like, everybody was, like, kind of scared to touch DCEL. And I'm like, bro, fuck them. Like, at the end of the day, we have to come together and dismantle that system if that system is bad. And that's coming from somebody who started at DCEL.
But you know what, though? One of the reasons that I want to talk to you and the reason that I reached out to ask you about what's going on with you these days is because we have to go through the things that we have to go through. And then if we're given the opportunity to go through them, man, that's how we grow up.
Exactly. I don't think I would have had this way of looking at things if I did not work for that particular organization.
Sure. But I also think that you wouldn't be as central to the shift in your life, in the life of other men and of your community, if you hadn't been honest with yourself and said, I can't do it from here.
Exactly.
Right? I can't do it from here. And that's kind of what happened with me in the jail is I was working inside of the jail. And I don't know if you know, but I've never been a black man, so I've never had that experience. But here I was working inside of the jail and with all of the tangles of administrative and, you know, how you can talk to somebody when you're on staff and how you can't, and you can't touch people and you can't, just all of the things that you couldn't do. Like, you can't be human with folks. You can't treat people as if they've endured tremendous amounts of trauma.
Damn.
Somebody sleeps in class, you can't understand that might be hypoarousal in a trauma-invested environment. Like, you can't know those things and not send somebody out of class. Like, I would let people sleep in class. I would go by them, I would talk to them. They'd be writing and not, you know, on task. I shifted the way that my class worked because class as class don't work. You know what I mean? Like, we had to have, and you said something earlier too. Let me not get distracted, because if you let me, I'll be on 15 tangents and we'll forget where we were at. That's just how my brain works. It's messed up. So I wanted to get back to when I was working inside of the jail, it occurred to me finally that I was so depressed because I wasn't helping. I was like, I thought at first that I would be able to help folks inside. And I think that I did to some degree in terms of bringing light and bringing witness and bringing acknowledgement and humanity and listening. I would just listen. We would have conversations. Our class was a conversation, man. We would all just, you know, get real with each other and talk about where we've been and what we've been through and see how much we couldn't relate and all that business, right?
Yeah.
But the bottom line is I couldn't do it anymore. So when I left the jail and now I'm working on the outside, I'm starting to see things differently also. Just like you described with DCEL, man, it's like, you know what? I don't know what the solution is.
Man.
I don't know what the solution is, except that I have to work on me.
At the end of the day, it's going to come back to that every time.
At the end of the day, I got to know who I am. I got to know what my issues, what reach I have, what impact I can have on folks and who I can have it on. Who can I empower in this life looking the way that I look? That's really it. Because even if I know that I am a part of this bigger soul or this bigger spirit that is the human race, even if I know that, I mean, that's going to inform the way that I move. Man. But the reality is when I walk into a room, folks see what they see, man.
Absolutely.
Folks see what they see and they associate it with things that they've experienced that looks like it. And that's true for you and that's true for me. That's true for the police. And so we have got to deal with that for real, too.
It really cripples the way that we deal with each other.
Yes.
And a place where we say, how do we move forward? You know,
yeah.
I'm all for forgiveness, but trust how hard it is to forgive when you know that you've done wrong. And you know that that person probably does not deserve it. But you should give it because it's righteous. You know, that's kind of where my thing is with a lot of, like, the liberation thing. I'm like, man, look, my eyes have been open and I've been deceived while my eyes have been wide open, you know what I mean, by people that I supposedly had trusted and loved that didn't look like me. The whole idea behind Mercer is the fact that it's human, not black, not white. So it's like I have to carry that all the time when I look at people, because I come from a neighborhood where all I see is me. But when I leave, all I see is other.
And you're not unique in that, man. That's one of the things that we need to talk about. Everybody is a product of their environment. Mm-hmm. Even the racist ass fool who is sitting on a corner saying stupid shit. I probably got relatives in my family that would see you and grab their purse.
Man.
I mean, it's just that way because they're a product of their environment too. They never got to know somebody like you. They never had relationship. You said relationship is so critical. I believe that 100%. So we got to know that we're all doing that, man. That said, you walking into a situation, what comes with that is going to hold you stuck in ways that it ain't never going to hold a white person stuck.
Man, and you know, I got a lot of great allies, right? So it's like, for what it's worth, I feel advantaged compared to a lot of people. The organizations that I work with now, you know, and the people that I've known for a long time, like you, you know, like give me hope, right? But I also got to acknowledge that, like, we are a very much of a 10% of a 90% world of people who want to see righteous stuff done. So how do we make it to where we are merging worlds together, one, and two, trying our best to identify people who, not the choir, right, but the people who don't want to listen. How do we get to the people who ain't trying to hear what we talk about? Because those are the people, I don't want to say conversion or anything like that, because I don't like being converted. But there has to be some black and white and some of what is right and what is wrong, what is just and what is not. And it's confusing right now because we have a criminal justice system that's locking more people up for nothing than another group of people for doing a lot of other shit, right? And it's confusing, you know? It's hard to say, stop, let's start over. But it's also not going to be a situation to where we're tearing everything down. So it's going to look like me talking to you, you talking to me, and then realizing, damn, I am you and you are me. Shit, let me treat you like that. Let me treat you how I would want to be treated, or how I would know as my reflection is to be treated, right? Because we are reflections of each other, no matter what shade of fucking color we is. You know what I mean? It's more of a construct, and I don't think criminal justice or the idea of someone being an ist or something understands, right? Because if you perfect something, you become an ist at it. You know, the suffix of ist. You know, you're great at pianos, you become a pianist. You know
the
what I mean?
Suffix of ist. I love that. Go ahead, preach.
So if you talk about race and you talk about like a lot of the winning powers of the world is Caucasians, they become like, it's not always a bad thing to be racist if you care about your race, right? But then there's good racist. I care about my race, but there's nothing wrong with other races. Then there's bad racist. Fuck all races. They all have to go. You know what I mean? And I think with the criminal justice system in America, it supports Caucasian racism, the bad guy. Because there's nothing wrong with loving your people. But there is something wrong with destroying other people because you think they're not your people.
All right, hold on. For anybody who's listening, I just got to pause. I'm gonna highlight that. So first of all, you just broke down some linguistics. Know what we're talking about. Using language properly. Mm-hmm. So you just broke down the ist and throwing race onto it. And then you said there's nothing wrong with loving your people. But there is wrong with hurting other people because they're not your people. And that's the world that you're living in.
That's what I'm living in right now.
And that's the difference. That's the difference, right? That's where the term white privilege comes in, right? That's the difference, that we both live in a world that's jacked up. And maybe we can both see it. But you are on the side of that story where you don't belong to the one that has the power. In the way that we just discussed that, I think that's obvious. But I would flip that real quick and say that one of the reasons I wanted to talk to you, and I hope that you can tell us a little bit now about the fact that you are powerful, and the fact that you are powerful because you know who you are.
Absolutely.
And that you are powerful because you know what you're capable of. And you are powerful because you value community and you have some sort of spiritual lean that guides you, brother. And I wanted to know a little bit about that.
Now, this takes me back to Dr. Prince White. He would always jam in my head, what's the definition of power, bro? And I'd be like, man, shut up. Like, why you, you always in my ass about, like, you know, simple shit. And he'd be like, look, bro, the definition of power is the idea to make somebody do what you don't want them to do. Don't you think they're doing that to us right now? We know we don't want to be locked up. We don't want to be oppressed. We don't want to be this, but they're making it to where we are accepting that. how do we flip the paradigm and make it to where, even though, like, for the criminal justice system, how do we make it to where, even though they want to lock us up, they just can't? That's power. I'm thinking about that, right? And I'm thinking in my head, all right, as a young black man, I'm said to not have any power. Who the fuck is to say that I ain't got no power, right? And if I'm in it, now that I think back, a lot of times who told me I don't have no power are the same teachers that I did not learn from in school. Mr. Spaulding, Ms. Coulson, all of them who was like, yeah, get out of my class, giving me referrals before I even walked in type shit. Those people seeing my power as well, but were so intimidated by it that within their authority or power, cut it right off as a young man. And what that does, it does one or two things to a person and makes them believe that they don't have any power, or it makes them rebel. And I went to the rebel side, right? I'm like, I can't believe that what I'm saying is wrong. You telling me it's wrong, I have to rebel, right? Now, a lot of other people that may be like me, I can see how they would shift the power to be like, damn, this dude is right. I ain't shit. I'm so glad that I didn't go into that room. You feel what I'm saying? Because I could have easily went into that I ain't shit room, let me be a product of my environment room, and start fucking shit up. Like, you could be a great leader. And I told Hillary this as well. I could be a great leader and lead the people, or I could be a fucked up leader and burn down the city. You know?
And that's the truth, man. And that's the truth. And I love you for saying that. I have to tell you that as you were speaking, I really, really heard what you were saying through my own lens. I'm also doing work within the faith communities and trying to build intersectionality and inclusion for the gay community. You know, I'm a lesbian, I'm married to a woman, and I grew up in a Presbyterian household. And so that's been my big struggle, right, is walking into a room and being seen as straight and having to live up to that. That's been my matrix, right? And only now, beginning to really see the value of the way that I was made, the value of the things that I've had to see, like the times, the amount of times that I've been able to be like a fly on the wall in so many different conversations, you know, in the closet, people not knowing, but talking about me and seeing how people really feel, that kind of mess, right? But when you said that you would walk into the room and the teachers would see the power, be intimidated by it, and cut it off, I know that feeling, man. And I think that I was one of the ones that was scared to rebel. And that's why I'm about to turn 45 years old, and I'm just starting to find my voice, man, as a queer woman, you know. And I have to say that the Black community is the community that I was able to stay in refuge with, because I felt in my heart a lot of the pain, but it wasn't my direct experience. But I was always loved and embraced there because it understood me better than the white power structure or the other relatives of my family who didn't understand any of the second guessing their worth, second guessing the value of
absolutely
an individual. So
absolutely.
I think what you just said is so powerful. I want to stay on it for a minute, man. I think it's just, you know, as human beings, we adopt the beliefs of the people around us. And my God, if we write those into ourselves, if we really believe, like what you said is, you knew that what you were feeling wasn't wrong, so you had to rebel. But what if you would have been like, man, they're right, I'm not shit. In my situation, the world had God on their side, and I knew God was the dog, right? So I was just like, well, shit, they're right, I'm not shit. And so I spent years like that, man, and my rebelling was, you know, acting out sexually and acting out with drugs and alcohol and acting out with just being a fool, right?
Mm-hmm.
Talk to me about when it shifted for you, about recognizing, really recognizing and really starting to build on your voice and knowing that you have the power to shift your world, even if it's a small little area, and that ripple effect into the larger world and learning to focus on what you can affect. Tell me about that, man.
I think more along that line of being able to like change the effect thing had to do with music. And for me, being like, I've always been like a weirdo compared to my community. Like, you know, I ain't gangster enough to be with the gangsters, but I ain't nerdy enough to be with the nerds. Like, I was always in the middle right there. A lot of my outlet was music, right? And I would always make songs about things that were far-fetched from what the usual hip-hop scheme was. It wasn't just about money, clothes, cars, hoes. It was about Pokemon or some shit. You know, it was like about other things. Like, I remember my mama made me do 40 raps on 14th and Peralta for this OG, and he gave me $20 hold. Like, so my biggest outlet was being able to express myself musically with a pen. I was a great free writer, and that helped me exercise all of that energy that could have went different areas. I think music was that pathway to me figuring out that I have a voice and that my voice is important because I'm supposed to know all the messages that I send, which I didn't know when I was a young kid. So there was a point to where I was trying to do music per se for everybody else. I'm going to do this because I think that this person would like this song. Ain't nothing wrong with that, right? But more importantly, I need a voice for myself because I feel like at one point in time, I represent a lot of people. And if I just talk about my problems, somebody go hear that shit. So it's really important for me to like use, it's already bad enough that I know that I'm using per se, the word of my oppressor. I'm a tree with onion roots, if you feel what I'm saying. So just acknowledging that I'm trying to find my way to learn about myself enough so I don't have to struggle in America with certain idealistics because I can just let it go versus saying like, why is it attacking me so hard? Music was that outlet.
Yeah.
I could talk about it. So after a while doing that music and realizing that I spread a voice for myself because I speak for other people, I started making songs about political shit. I made a song called Self-Revolution that talks about gun violence, but not black-on-black gun violence. It talks about police gun violence. I talk about Oscar. I had an opportunity to perform it this year at the Marching for Our Lives parade in front of 60,000 people, right? I made that song years ago, and it's just now being, like, recognized because sometimes it just takes for people to recognize your voice a little bit too late.
Don't you understand it? Don't take nothing for granted. Go hard in your beliefs until they call you granted. Even God know that you can't withstand it. Saving in the raging years, bruh, like a candy. Cause what you know about all this here I'm going through. Going house to house to teach a lesson to these fools. At the moment it's monkey see and monkey do. All I can tell you is that it won't be me, it won't be you. So we gotta make a conscious decision and think about how we can change the progress we live in. And think about how we can move the progress we give in. And we all gotta do it by the inches. Ain't no turning back. Yeah, ain't no turning back. I said it ain't no turning back. What? Ain't no turning back.
Next week, we'll continue talking with Leo.
It's really, really hard to trust my elders because for as long as I've been alive, my elders have been oppressed themselves. And they've used young men like me as decoys to a lot of their struggles. Why does that idea have to be passed down? But that's the way that it is with a lot of us. We've been just butchered into believing our own tools of destruction.
This has been another episode of Just Say It. I'm your host, Jen Slumack. I'd like to invite you to go to my website and check out other things that are dear to my heart, www.soulnotskin.com. Meet me here next week for the next episode. And you know what? In the meantime, man, why don't you just go love somebody?